The Persons of Presence podcast does not condone the use of illegal substances. The following information is purely for educational and entertainment purposes.
Retracing lightly these meridians in my mind.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another Persons of Presence podcast interview. I'm here with Penn Johnson, a local artist living out his dream life, an alternative lifestyle, I would say. We're here in his beautiful home, his mobile van home.
I've got so many boxes.
You got so many boxes and so many interesting stories to tell the people of the world.
The boxes are for the stories.
What's in the boxes?
Stories. Oh, there's an inverter in one of the boxes. I gotta give my guitar back. It broke, so I'm getting a new guitar. So it's really interesting because it's like this whole new chapter of life is sort of unfolding. You know, like it's almost like the person I was has like died, and now I'm moving on to this new person. And I was watching this video of Jim Carrey, and he says you need to change who you are or kill who you are to make way for the person you need to be.
So who is the old Penn Johnson? The Penn Johnson that...
Right. You know, just a lot of copious use of a whole bunch of mind-altering substances in a really sort of non-conscious, abusive way. Heap of drinking, and you know, just got really into the rock star lifestyle a little too much
as an artist.
Yeah, and I think just, yeah, I mean, hitting the road with a whole bunch of people who were really into that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And now sort of kicking everybody out, being on my own, just sort of, you know, finding myself and really learning to appreciate the infinite love inside.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long, this sort of hedonistic use of substances is associated with, as you said, the rock star lifestyle. And I'm not even sure what sort of words I should use to describe you. Singer, songwriter? I mean, you write songs, you have a few on Spotify. What's the title that we should call you, if there is such a thing?
I don't know, man. I just want to like stay groovy and spread peace and eat some vegetables, like fruits and whatnot. You know, like I it's kind of hard to say what I am or who I am, because I think I've sort of been moving away from that sort of description and moving toward just being me and doing the shit out of being me.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Grohl says, you know, he's like, he does this video on YouTube. It's like, the way to be a successful musician, how to use social media. It's like, the video cuts in. He's like, you don't need social media. You don't need any of that shit. All you need to do is play the shit out of your instrument. And I was like, I'm just going to start doing that. And then once I started doing that, people were like, oh, man, that's cool. You do that? And I'm like, yeah. And then you have stickers and all that stuff and CDs, and you dish that shit out and hope someone else is inspired to, you know, not do what you're doing, but just do something for someone else, for a higher purpose.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Sort of being inspired by the life force, the passion, the, like, will to want something greater and self-expression, too. I think we need a lot more of self-expression in our lives. So what, you play guitar, you play harmonica, right?
I do.
And
I do.
What is there?
Ukulele.
Any?
Ukulele.
Ukulele.
I really want to be able to... My favorite thing is in a jam, just being able to hop on different instruments. Like the bands that are like, oh, hold up, we're going to switch up our setup really quick. And like everybody takes a different instrument. You're like, whoa, wait a second. And then the vibe totally changes.
Absolutely.
And the really cool thing about harmonica is that often there's not a whole lot of people who play harmonica. So you can hop up in a jam and they're small. So you can put them in your pocket, yeah. Have them in your pocket if you know you're going somewhere where there are people who are playing.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, oftentimes like person on stage, you can like hold up a harmonica and they'll be like, yeah, you know, and give you like the key, and then you go up there and just wail on it, you know? And then people are like, whoa, man, that was awesome. It's like, yeah, I play music too. And that's a good foot in the door.
That's awesome. How long have you been playing music, practicing? Was a guitar your first instrument?
Yeah. Kind of an interesting question, because I started playing in high school a little bit. I took a beginner guitar class my senior year of high school. You wearing a shirt for the first time? Anyway, Zach just showed up.
Zach, the founding father of the Persons of Presence podcast.
Yeah, take off that shirt though, it's weird.
This is good. This will give us at least 4 more views.
Yeah! Woo!
So anyway, we were talking about guitars, your first instruments.
Right, yeah. So my senior year of high school, I took an intro to music class. Well, at 10 years old, I had this really shitty Walmart guitar. Can I say shitty?
Yeah, you can say shitty, man. Please, I want to hear all about the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man. I think that's what everyone wants to hear about.
So at 10 years old, I was taking guitar lessons in the small town Marion, Massachusetts, where I grew up, born and raised. And one of the first lessons, the guy was trying to teach me how to bar chords. And I had, like, not only no finger strength, because I was, and still am, very small. Like, my fingers are very, they're more like piano hands than guitar hands.
Yeah.
But the guitar was really bad, and it was hard to bar the guitar. And I thought that was the only way to do it. So after 2 lessons, I was like, I'm never going to be able to bar this guitar. I'm done
with
guitar.
What is barring the guitar?
Oh, this is a ukulele in a violin case. Like, what is this guy selling instruments? So barring is when you're like, this is not going to sound good because I don't know how to bar a ukulele. But hey, that sounded all right. But barring is when you use sort of like this finger as a bar and you create a chord. So like, this is an open chord. This is a bar chord. Okay. Again, that didn't sound great. But on a guitar, when you're 10 years old, you can't do that sort of thing. So. Or I couldn't. Not
so
on the
sort
guitar.
Sort of discouraging.
Yeah. So I was like, well, I can't play guitar. I'm done.
Yeah.
So I gave up. And then my senior year of high school, my chorus teacher at the time was like, you should take this beginner guitar course. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then she was like, open chords. And I was like, whoa, wait a fucking second. Open chords?
And you were how old again?
I was high school, senior year.
Senior year of high school, okay.
17.
And you said you started at what age again? The 14?
13? No, 10 was when I like had the guitar and like, but so I had the guitar.
But
the
were
whole
you playing
time.
Much?
No,
so
not
you,
at
so
all.
So you kind of picked it back up senior year.
Yeah, okay. and then, you know, into college, I was playing a little bit, like doing open mics and like messing up a whole lot. Couldn't really get through a whole song, and then I went to study abroad in Australia, and my homestay family down there was played in a band called The Bridge with a whole bunch of people with disabilities, and they would all like switch up instruments and do all that stuff. So we would jam at night and hang out and a lot of campfires and stuff like that, and played for a whole bunch of people and all that stuff. But I came back to the US after studying abroad and writing a book about it. Where's my book? Oh, it's in my cooler.
Because they're cool.
We can edit that out.
No,
anyway,
man, that's beautiful.
So I wrote this book about studying abroad. It's a journal of every, you know, people walking by on rollerblades, feel like 1970 up in this bitch. Anyway, so right, it's like a journal of my study abroad experience, because I got like really bad grades when I studied abroad, and I wanted to, I guess, compensate for that. So I was like, boom, I'm gonna write a fucking book. So I did.
That's pretty awesome.
And yeah, my friend helped me sort of like publish it, get it out there. It's really cool. The album art's really, really groovy.
Yeah.
But it's every day I was there. It's a journal. It's got, you know, mushroom trips and, you know, 420. I candy flipped in the Australian wilderness at this festival in the middle of the jungle. And it's got my study abroad independent study project. So it's like a whole bunch of interviews with people who are living sustainable lifestyles that aren't necessarily your typical, like, you know, we have solar panels and all this stuff and, you know, we do what we can to recycle. It's like, no, it's like some of them are like permaculture farmers. Some of them are living in intentional communities. Some of them are, you know, like built their own houses and homes and stuff like that and have farm animals and all that. So there's so this,
it's more, and that totally resonates with me, I think, because a lot of times I think we focus on like carbon footprint and carbon offset, and I think it's a much deeper issue than that, right? It's about like permaculture. And one of the things that, as a fan and as a friend of yours, that sticks out to me is that little sticker that you have on your guitar that says
Farming is revolution.
Farming is revolution, right? And I think we got to come back to permaculture, and I think it's awesome that you have sort of that message and that, that passion inside of you to sort of... does it give you like purpose and
it's a big part of like the words flowing through me too, and the message is like, you know, one of the lyrics in the song I just wrote is food coming from the garden, less and less from all these stores. We'll tear these buildings down by changing our consumption, forage in the forest, make a home and build a nest. So it's like, we're not gonna, you know, we'll metaphorically tear these buildings down and, you know, render all of this I guess infrastructure useless by changing our consumption and changing our patterns and really just manifesting a better future.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving back to the gardens and moving back to growing our own food and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, so studying abroad, guitar, came back. The first day back, I smoked 17 joints with 17 different people. It was awesome. I flew back from Australia, slept 3 hours, took a train to my college, then all these joints, slept maybe another 2 hours, then drove 3 hours to Pittsburgh. So it was like, I think it was like 60 hours of travel. Then we watched Iron and Wine and I ate some LSD. So it was like 60 hours of traveling, LSD, and then like, it was crazy. But it was this awesome experience. I came back and I wanted to play more guitar and, you know, be more involved in the music and whatnot, and just had disconnected from a lot of the people while I was studying abroad because I didn't use my phone much. I wasn't, you know,
yeah,
I was like very much there and didn't have phone service a whole lot.
So reconnecting with the culture and the people of the United States.
Yeah, when I first got to Australia for the first 3 weeks, my mom didn't even know I was alive because she was like, text me when you get there, and I didn't have a phone. So like 3 weeks go by and I call my mom and she's like yelling at me and I'm like, whoa, this is like too much, you know, because I hadn't like talked to them in 3 weeks. And but I came back from Australia and I wanted to play more guitar, so I was playing open mics and my friend was like, you should talk to this guy, his name's Rusty Banks, he's my guitar professor. So I sent him an email and was like, hey Rusty, my friend Chris had to reach out, this is what I blah 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 blah, you know, whatever, I write songs and do this stuff. And he was like, come by, you know, whatever, come by and let's talk about it. So I went by, played him a couple songs, and he was like, yeah, I really like what you're doing, I'm gonna teach you how to form and craft a song a little better. And you know, the semester went on and he would give me all these assignments and I wouldn't really do them because I would come in and I'd be like, he'd be like, did you do that homework? And I'd be like, no, but I wrote a song, you want to hear it? You know, and that's something I'm always doing, is writing more and more songs. And something that I feel like is really unique about me as a musician, because I know a lot of musicians who don't write a whole lot and they're like, oh, I haven't written a song in X amount of time, and I'm like, dude, I can't even go like 3 days without writing a song. I start freaking out.
Yeah.
Like I need to like get this.
And it sort of sometimes spontaneously comes to you, right?
Yeah, it's a form of meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like meditate, yoga, songs, ocean, you know, sunlight.
And is that a muscle that you have to keep practicing? Is there some intrinsic talent that you think maybe you have or something you're drawn to? Or,
well, I've been writing for like a decade, so okay. My senior year of high school I wrote my first novel and finished it my freshman year of college.
Okay.
Shit is fucking awful.
Was it published?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it's good. I sent it to a few people and they really liked it, but I hate it.
Yeah.
It's very much based on like a Holden Caulfield-esque sort of voice from Catcher in the Rye. So to preface that, I read Catcher in the Rye and I was like, oh shit, writing can be dope. It doesn't need to be boring as fuck. So I wrote a 28-page continuation to Catcher in the Rye to get into college instead of submitting my SATs. SAT optional. Fuck you, SATs. No, but for real. Fuck you, Gumby. But so I did that, and I did some impressions in my college interview, and I got this like letter from them that was like, that was weird, you know, like that was like really interesting and different. We've never had an interview like that. And it was like a handwritten letter, you know, not like a typed out letter. So it was like really legit from the people themselves. And then I applied early decision and got into school. So I didn't need, you know, SATs or high test scores, which I've never gotten. I've never been good at tests.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty impressive to write something like that. I know it's not something a lot of people can do. I mean, maybe it's not impressive to you, and maybe it's only impressive because we don't do that, you know? Like,
right.
I think we all have, like, maybe the capacity to do more of that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, so I did that for, like, 3 semesters and was just writing more and more songs and playing out at open mics. And then I graduated, didn't know what I was going to do. I had spent time working with a group... getting my school to divest from fossil fuel investments. So I was working with 350.org to work on that. We got a meeting with our Board of Trustees Investment Committee, and we had the company we were going to reinvest in, and we had a 10-minute presentation with them and a 10-minute presentation of how we were going to divest. The Board of Trustees didn't care. They were on their iPads, their phones. They didn't even listen, you know?
Yeah.
And then everything sort of fell apart. I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't have a job when I graduated, so... my friend called me up, and I was living with my parents, and she was like, we're working on, you know, fighting fracking and all this stuff in Northeast Pennsylvania. We're working on government funding, like a grant, you know, to do this, but we don't have anything other than food and a place to stay. And I was like, well, beats living with my parents, so later, Massachusetts. So I drove down to Pennsylvania, and it was my first sort of experience into, like, living really rurally and around that sort of type of people. Like, Northeast Pennsylvania is, like, really... Yeah, well, they basically... Yeah, all of these farmers in Northeast Pennsylvania... it's kind of hard to... It's just, like, so many memories, you know, come back into mind from that. But all of these farmers are doing what they can, and all these... gas workers come in, you know, these high executives, and they come and they're like, yeah, we're only gonna drill a couple wells, you know, it's gonna be really great for you and for your farm and all that stuff, you know, 950 wells, 1,000 violations later, it's like terrible, you know, and like neighbors are pitted against each other, and everyone's like, it's all about money, and the farms aren't making any money, and they can't farm anymore, and people are losing certifications and all that stuff. So it's something not a lot of people know about, because if you're not there and you've never seen a drilling well,
yeah,
then you have no idea.
So what did it cause damage to limit the viability of the farms? Is that what you're saying happened with the fracking?
Yeah, I mean, it messes with the certifications. Like, if you have an organic certification, like, there's like a lot of stuff that can.
It's hard to be organic if you have fracking going on in the same area.
I think
area.
It's impossible. Yeah, because the. Even what we're seeing with, like, these fires in California, you know, like, the smoke is, like, my friend just hit me up from Dallas, the woman who helped me publish this book, and she was like, yeah, the smoke from the fires is here. And it's like, you know, if smoke is coming that far, imagine fracking chemicals and all that stuff
absolutely.
That we can't even see that's naked, you know, to the naked human eye. We can't even fathom what we're inhaling and breathing in. So I was living there and doing that as a journalist and photographer. And we were going to rallies and all that stuff, and campaigning against the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline, which I actually think is being built right now, which was crazy to be back in Pennsylvania, you know, just again and watching all of this go down. It's just
devastating. I mean, I don't know much or anything about that pipeline, but to see the North Dakota Access Pipeline, and that still got built, right? And they were going to build it on the white people's land. They complained, so they... And then they hired mercenaries and whatnot. It seemed like it was a war zone. And I know some people who talked to, like, Ava, who runs the Ecstatic Dance in Denver. It's like a traumatic experience for her. She went there to protest, and it's kind of really brutal what happened. What happened at this pipeline? Were there protests?
I mean, there have been a few. I wasn't up there when they were protesting, because it was more of, like, the pre-phase.
Yeah.
But I've seen, like, live videos of people protesting and whatnot, and blockades and all that stuff, and it's happening all the time. And it's so funny, because when you're not a part of that, you're not a part of that scene, you wouldn't even know what's going on, because the mainstream media is just so hush about it.
Yeah,
you know. And what I saw, so that sort of dovetails really well into why I started playing music more, because what I saw was just all of this terrible stuff, and it led me to write all these songs that were, like, anti-fracking related, and it was really healing stuff for activists who needed hope and, you know, more just sort of like, you know, the sun on the horizon, sort of, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel sort of thing. And I started hanging out with a friend of mine, Jess Aluzzi, who's a songwriter up there, and my friend introduced me to her, and it was crazy, you know. I was just like, whoa, like, this girl was like, you know, 30, like a decade older than me, and just felt like total soulmate, you know. And she introduced me to this cat, Todd Snyder, whose flag this actually is. She gave me this. He gave it to her, and she gave it to me. She said every hippie needs a gypsy flag. You know? And sort of inspired a lot of... I saw him at the Sellersville Theater. One night, she was literally just like, we're going to see Todd Snyder. It's 2 hours away. We're driving there. Let's go. And that was sort of where I learned this spontaneous, like, oh, it's okay to just pick up and just drive 2, 4, 6, 10, 19 hours, you know, just for whatever, just for the experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you got the gas money to get there and, you know.
So did you see yourself before this inspiration to write about fracking and about political activism? Did you see yourself more as a journalist?
Yeah.
Like a turning point where you maybe were like, maybe this is, or was there ever?
So I was basically like, well, when you have a guitar, more people listen.
That's a good point, man.
And so I was like reciting poetry and reading at open mics and stuff like that. And I was like, shit, man, when you have a guitar and then you add a harmonica into it, people are like, whoa, he can play the harmonica and the guitar at the same time. That's like crazy. And I'm like, you know, I might sound like shit for the first, like I had just started and someone was like, whoa, how long have you been doing that? I was like, 4 days. You know, and I had like a set of like $30 harmonicas, which were terrible. Like, you know, $30 for 7 harmonicas. Really poor quality stuff. Yeah. Now I've got like special 20s, which are like really nice harmonicas.
How much does a good harmonica run?
$40.
Okay.
Per harmonica, I have 7 of them. So it's an investment, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
But a harmonica still sounds like a more accessible instrument than, say, like a decent guitar or any. Like,
yeah.
Most nice seems like it's fairly affordable.
And for a while, I was actually still sort of sell lower end harmonicas at shows for people who are like into it. Someone was saying I should put like my logo on there, and I don't know, that's just too much.
Yeah.
But I really like the idea because, yeah, like you said, harmonicas are, you know, you can fiddle with a harmonica and anyone can make it sound pretty cool. Especially if you're in the right key, it's really hard to mess up a harmonica solo. Like, for the most part, if you're in the right key. If you're in the wrong key, then you're screwed. But if you're in the right key, then it's going to sound pretty decent. You know, especially I play straight harp, so there's cross harp, which is like 4 steps, I think it's down or up. I'm dyslexic, which doesn't help me read music at all, because I don't read music at all. But anyway, so cross harp is like what Bob Dylan played, sort of sounds a little more edgy, like folksy, very... I don't know, just listen to any Bob Dylan tune, you're like, that harmonica sounds like it might not be super on point. And then straight harp is when you play the key that you're actually playing in. So you can do harmonies and, you know, all that cool sort of stuff and really stick with the vibe of the song and, you know, not like take away anybody by having, I don't know. Cross harp for me, if it's the wrong person playing it, is just like,
yeah.
It sounds really, yeah, really weird. And the straight harp is much more pleasant.
I mean, is it supposed to sound weird? Because Bob Dylan's vocals sound weird to me.
Yeah, really,
like,
weird.
The content of his lyrics is profound.
Oh, it's amazing.
But yeah. He's
a poet.
But the execution of his vocal, I mean, but it's kind of nice. It's kind of cool to hear that kind of, like, it's something different. You know, it's not like a Frank Sinatra or Michael Bublé.
Right, and something. I think that's a part of it and something that's so important when you're like writing songs or telling stories and stuff is like being unique about it, having a unique way of doing it. And people like Todd Snyder, Townes Van Zandt, Blaze Foley, like John Prine, you know, those are the people who inspire me to like start telling stories. And then people like Nako and Trevor Hall and Xavier Rudd, I started listening to their stuff, and you know, like Ed Sheeran, and mixing like, you know, like percussive strumming with, you know, sort of like spoken word, like conscious rap sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool to sort of see, which is also an interesting dovetail, because like I started writing these songs about fracking, anti-fracking, in the lion's den of fracking. And
yeah,
like had my life threatened a couple times.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a landman in Montrose And he pulled me outside, and he was like, "Man, I really love these songs you're singing, but I hate to see you wind up on the side of the road."
Oh shit! It was some like mafia threat. I'd hate if something happened to you.
Well, the landman is the guy who goes to the house and is like, "Hey, like this is what we're proposing." You know, comes all nice dressed,
yeah,
like, very businesslike.
So this guy came in like a suit and threatens you like that.
We were at a bar.
Okay.
And he came in, and you can recognize these people because he came in, immediately ordered a drink for everybody, threw mad money on the table, and I was just like, "Oh, okay, I need to talk to this guy, right?" So I started talking to him, and I was playing songs that night and stuff like that, you know, clearly anti-fracking stuff.
Yeah.
Which is funny because now, even when I was playing songs, like I played this song that I wrote for Bernie Sanders back in 2016 called Another Year, which is on this Barefoot Bandit CD that I've been throwing around. I don't know, there's a copy in this backpack somewhere. But, and I started sort of doing all this. I can't find a copy of it, but it's in here somewhere.
It's okay. We got some good footage of you going through the bag.
Right.
It's worth it.
I think there's one up here. Barefoot Bandit. That's my little, you know, burn for those who need hope. Got my website, my InstaFish ID on there.
Dope.
But anyway, so I was playing this song down in an open mic in Dallas. And this guy wearing a Trump for President shirt comes up to me afterwards. He's like, "Man, I love the content of your lyrics and your music.
Really?
It's amazing. I want to give you a hug." And I was just like, that was when I sort of realized, door's going to shut. That's when I sort of realized that this stuff is for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
There's no
exclusion.
That's
a pretty profound moment to have a Trump supporter come up to you. Because that's the opposite end of the spectrum of you.
And I have friends who are Trump supporters. And, you know, like, it's so interesting because when you come down to the basic, most basic level, everyone's like music, food, happiness, you know, clean water, like all these things are important to all people.
Yeah.
It's just framing it in a way that doesn't take away livelihood, that doesn't hurt, you know, jobs, or like giving alternatives and stuff like that. And that was the biggest thing in Pennsylvania that we were saying, because we were drinking with gas workers, you know, and we were like, we're not trying to take away your livelihood.
Right.
We want to give you a transition to another job where you're making money and helping the earth. We're not just knocking you off the face of the earth. You know?
Absolutely.
We're here to help you transition to a clean energy job where you could be making money and supporting your family and also
Having
a positive impact.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's something that I've found has rung true through all these lyrics. Because all of these, you know, people will sort of ask, like, what inspires your lyrics or blah, 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 and, like, start conversations. And it doesn't matter who it is, you know. These lyrics are for everybody. And that was the first thing I realized with the first CD I had, which I have these two CDs that I sort of took off. You can't get them unless you support me on this site called Patreon, which is sort of like it's a way for independent artists and musicians and, you know, content creators to make a monthly income and also, you know, contribute and give something back.
To their supporters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What's your Patreon?
It's just, what is it?
How can people find your Patreon if they want to?
It's just patreon.com/PennJohnson.
Okay.
Penn, two N's, Johnson, like you spell Johnson.
Okay.
And
is there another place where people can reach out to find you? Or do you have a website? Is there a best place to find
yourself? Yeah, PennJohnson.net.
Okay.
Hit me up on Instagram, PennJohnson.
Okay. We'll put those links in the description.
Yeah, definitely. And, but the cool thing is, so these first two records, the first one I recorded in Boston, and it was really like folk pop, you know, a lot of these anti-fracking songs. And then the second one I recorded more sort of like a singer-songwriter sort of thing that I recorded in Woburn, Massachusetts. And then this third sort of thing is, it's a whole bunch, it's from live shows, some recordings in Dallas, some recordings in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And that's where a couple of these songs that I just released are from. I recorded in Bethlehem at a place called Shards Studio, up there with my buddy Matt Mulchani.
Okay.
And my friend Chad Brown. Really just the kind of vibe I was looking for all along. you know, upbeat, fun, full band sort of sound, more than just the singer-songwriter thing, which I really want to get back into, and especially, you know, getting away from the steel string and moving to the nylon string, because I was sort of forced, you know, in this time, because the steel string sort of shit the bed, has really reminded me that the singer-songwriter thing can be really impactful, and it's just opens up a whole new sort of vibe. And a lot of the stuff I've been writing recently has been really meditative, and you know, it's more singer-songwriter.
Yeah. Sort of. Like. Would you call Nako? Would you call his stuff meditative, or would you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's on a bigger sort of indie label now, so he's got to appease the indie label people.
Yeah.
But I love his stuff. I love Trevor's stuff. I love Xavier Rudd and my friend Christina Holmes and my friend Dakota Mucky and like all these Adam Elfers and, you know, Greg Bogard and all these people who are singing this medicine music, you know, and spreading these positive vibrations. And it's really cool to hear other people telling stories, and, you know, people will message me and say they're inspired and all that stuff. And it's just cool, you know. I keep that stuff for a rainy day when people say stuff like that. I'm just like, you know, when I'm feeling down or whatever, I'll like look through messages from people that have, you know, that I've screenshotted that have
helped that you've inspired them, and it kind of inspires you to staying on the path and doing what you're doing.
Positive
right?
feedback. Absolutely. Loop, man. Yeah. So, but it's interesting to the meditative stuff. Some of it's more upbeat and fun, and some of it's more laid back. It's sort of just this whole mash of whatever is going on in the cosmos is just like directly channeled into the stuff that's been flowing through me and just out. And people will say, you know, they're just like watching you on stage, it's like it's just like this flow, you know.
Yeah. I think I know the answer to this, but would you say it's like when you're doing something awesome like that, or you're writing a song or you're performing, is it like you're channeling something?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like this divine consciousness, you know. And a lot of that has been, you know, burning sage, cedar, you know, Palo Santo, you know, laying down tobacco, being grateful, saying prayers, like love letters to Creator, and like all that stuff, you know, before every show, before every meal, you know, there's always like this moment of gratitude and just realization of like the abundance that flows around us.
Yeah.
And I feel like more people need to start tapping into that, and more people are.
Yeah.
You know, collective prayer is becoming a thing, and I recently played a healing water ceremony for the Miccosukee tribe on Lake Okeechobee, and that was really sort of divine, because there was this guy played this song, and he was like, "This is an old Japanese invocation," and then I was like, "Whoa, wait a second." He played it, and then I was like, I asked the elders, I was like, is it okay? I'm called to play this song. Is it okay if I play it? It's called Invocation, you know? And I wrote it at a time when I really needed healing. And I think, you know, I think it has a place in the ceremony. And I played it, and people were like, whoa, what just happened? You know, and that was, you know, I don't, as far as I know, have any native blood in me. But my elders have told me that we're all natives of this land in some way, and you know, building connections with tribes and other people is, you know, is never a bad thing.
I think it's very important.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you consider the context of this of our country, that we were founded on genocide and
imperialism,
we just took over these people's land, and now we own it and we have private property, and they still are suffering, like we mentioned the Keystone Pipeline, and they're still being pushed back. And
right. It
really is kind of a travesty, because these people did sort of live with the land, and they did have this respect and this sort of consciousness and mindfulness that we're now seeing manifest itself in the current generation.
Yeah, it's resurfacing.
And it's cool to see you as a part of this revolution. And it's very interesting to hear your take on prayer and meditation and mindfulness and intention setting, because I think that's something that we all need, but we're traditional institutionalized religion doesn't necessarily give us what we need, even though we need this medicine, we need this sort of ceremony, we need this community. And I think it's awesome that you're connecting with the Native Americans. I think it's beautiful, and I think it's awesome that they also respect you, and yeah. they, you know, they're not rejecting that, and there is a bridge forming between the white man, let's say, unfortunately, like, you are a white man.
It's true.
And
ask my thighs.
Ask my thighs.
Hashtag ask my thighs. Don't search that. I don't know what's gonna happen.
So, to tie, I want to kind of see if we can get back to the killing. Find that wording kind of interesting, or the death of the old Penn Johnson. But that's like a long process, right? It's not an instant. Like, you took 20 grams of mushrooms and then you transformed as a loving, kind, intentional spirit, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
And you're still, like you said, you're still on this journey, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot. Yeah, I mean, and we're never not on the journey.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I've been realizing. I was talking with Tim yesterday while we were, you know, I was doing yoga and he was doing some slacklining stuff, and it's funny because I see people, you know, we see people all the time who are famous or made it or whatever, and they're not happy. You know, happiness is this. I actually just posted this thing on Instagram like today that was like, what is happiness to you? And the answers I'm getting are so interesting because they range from everything from like sunshine and breathing and awareness to like, you know, present moment and all that stuff. And I think it's just so important to know what makes you happy and do what serves your purpose. And that's been a big piece of my lyrics recently, because people are like, well, it sort of seems like you're preaching and, you know, like telling people what to do. And I don't mean for that to be the case at all. I consider the stuff that I say to be mantras, mostly to myself,
yeah,
that echo the collective,
yeah,
and sort of will serve a lot of people, might not serve you. And like, I say that in a lot of my songs, like, you know, do what is serving you,
yeah,
because that's ultimately what's most important. And as long as you're like, you know, not being a dick and not hurting anybody, you know, and you're serving your higher purpose, that's really, you know, all that we can. I think that's like the ultimate happiness, is just,
yeah,
and learning to go with the flow. You know, our society is so, and I find myself caught up with, you know, instant gratification, like messages back instantly and all this stuff. And the truth is, there's like none of that. You know, you can't like wait for some text back from someone for a week. You'll go nuts. You know, you just gotta put it out there and just be like, if it's meant and it'll serve my higher purpose, and if Creator wills it, then it'll happen.
Yeah.
You know? And that's been a huge lesson recently, especially, you know, sort of being in limbo and not playing as many shows as I would really like, but
yeah,
just having this time to hang out with you and Tim and just, like, this whole group that has just sort of come together into my life out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, and reconnect with old friends and stuff like that. And just, I used to be really anxious about needing to be in the next place
and being successful and being,
well, what is, or, success?
Well, I know, but you know, I'm sure you have your own goals, your ideas of,
right,
playing at festivals or shows, or I don't know what your ultimate, what you see in your future. But
me neither. Too busy being here now. Oh shit. Shout out to Ram Dass. For real though, Ram Dass,
yeah,
I will see you at some point. If you're watching this ever.
Is he dead?
No, Ram Dass is still kicking it.
Oh, okay.
In Maui. Yeah.
Isn't he paralyzed or something? He's like,
he had a stroke.
He like can't wipe his own ass or something?
I can't speak to that, but
I know, well, I know something happened to him where like it debilitated him so much that he has no choice but to be in the present moment every time, because like he can't even move or something.
He had a stroke.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how strokes work.
I don't either.
But
we shouldn't necessarily speak to that, but so what else is on the horizon for you? I know you were talking about living in the moment, and it might be hard to say what's on the horizon, but I mean, is there anything you're trying to manifest in your future, or any goals or any vision you have?
Vanifest? Just kidding.
More storage for the van?
Right. Yeah, less shit.
It's got some charm to it,
it's
man.
Funny, it's, because I've got like so few things, and I still think I have too. Like, I have like two pairs, like three pairs of pants, like four shirts. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always like, how can I get rid of more shit?
It's amazing. And I only have one pair of pants.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I have a pair of ski pants, but this is the only pair of pants I have.
That's good.
Not trying to one up you or anything.
Or one down me.
One down you. I'm more ascetic and minimalist.
Good on you, man. And that's the other thing, is like this comparison thing I've been finding with, like, especially with like bigger bands, and you know, everybody's always trying to make it and do more and be bigger and like all that stuff. And I'm just like, dude, like, if that's what makes you happy, do that. But ultimately, I feel like you're gonna find that that's not what it is about.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about just living your higher purpose and being here, you know. And I've had just moments with psychedelics and stuff like that that's really been like, this is all we have. Like, all, like, we don't even have the past. We kind of have the future, but we can't really say for certain what's going to happen, you know?
We can plant some seeds.
Yeah.
And try to cultivate
because
something.
Because so many things, you know, like,
yeah.
People are always like, well, where are you going next? What are you doing next? Where are you sleeping? What are you doing? I'm like, I have no idea, because it's the beginning of the day or it's the beginning of the night. And we have technology. Someone could hit me up and be like, yo, man, let's jam. Let's do this. Let's blah, 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 blah. You know, so it's like always constantly changing. So it's really hard for me to make plans.
So what, to go back to what you said, what is happiness for you, or how would you define happiness?
Wow. Bringing other people happiness, you know, and seeing other people. I mean, like, for me, my favorite thing is like when I'm playing songs and other people are singing along, and we're all just, because it's all just a mantra, it's all just this journey, this circle forming. This new song I just released, it's all about, you know, coming together, you know, widen your channels and breathe, let go of what is and just be, you know. We're gathered around this fire, huddled around this newfound family, that every day is a newborn chance to bring more hope and live to a slower beat. You know, it's like slowing down your heartbeat from maybe an accelerated sort of pace to like just being in the flow. And a big piece of that is dance and movement and, you know, asanas and pranayama and kundalini yoga and all that stuff. That I'm not an expert in any of this shit.
Right.
It's just coming through me, and I'm learning more and more. You know, I'll often play older songs and be like, well, I didn't even understand that lyric until just now, you know, even in part.
Right.
And that's the most fun thing, I think, about writing songs, is that I can come back to them. And, like, they're my most vivid memories are some of these songs, because I remember where I wrote them and what I was doing.
Yeah.
Where I was.
It's
I was hanging out with, you know, and it sort of just brings me, so I can be with anybody.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think what Tim said about how our human language, I'm not sure specifically what he said, but he said, like, the words of Mark Twain live on forever. And so in the same way, these songs, these creations, they live on forever, and you get a new chance to gain their perspective. And just from my own viewpoint, I find music to be a very religious experience. And oftentimes we talk about raising the vibration or whatnot, but I think the awesome thing about music, and especially when you're talking about singing lyrics together, is that we're all on the same frequency and we're all on the same wavelength and vibration. And I think it's beautiful. I think it's probably the most universal way. I mean, besides maybe food and dance, but it's all together, you know, food, music, dance. It's the way to bring people together.
Food, music, dance. We're making shirts.
Food, music, dance on a farm. On a ethically
around a fire
yeah,
with goats.
Some goat yoga.
Goga.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Pretty funny stuff to me, but let's not go down that tangent.
That is a tangent. But yeah, it's so funny, because like the more I think about it, the more I just realize that I have no idea. And, like, I'm There's the wind reminding me, like, hey, good job, Penn. You're realizing it. You know, every time I wrote the song called Call of the Wind that I'm hoping Naka will do a verse on. That's, you know, hold your hand in mine and we'll wander through this night. If you need me, you can call me. You know, you can call me through whatever channel. I'll be by your side. And when the sun or the moon returns, you know, when the day starts, when we restart, when humanity restarts, you know, and our prayers have all been burned, keeping it, you know, sacred and close to the heart, just listen to the call of the wind and remember these words. And then the words are, you know, oohs or ohs, or, you know, it's like this sort of just a mantra that you sing along to. It's just like the wind is just like doing this thing, and it's sort of this metaphor for the universal language of the wind being so important and just like calming you in a time when you need it.
That's awesome.
Unless you're freezing on a beach and you're like cold as
unless
shit.
Unless you're exposed.
Like, all right, wind. Okay, all right, I get it. Universal message. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, the wind and the clouds are sort of this constant reminder of the like ethereal nature of our reality that can sort of manifest and come out of nowhere. And you know, like clouds and wind, they just sort of come and go.
Yeah, right.
And it's what is it?
What, like, what is out there?
Yeah.
You know, they just found another Earth. And they're probably aliens.
If I ain't learning well, then guess I'm already dying. See my best friend struggle to stay alive. One day I'm in the clouds, the next I'm fighting for my life. I find the answers in the prayers I've been manifesting. Every day the sun is shining.